Welcome to the Playmakers Talk Show, where CEOs, business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas from world-famous entrepreneurs, business celebrities, and the Playmakers team of experts. You'll hear inspiring stories, playmaking ideas, and that one big thing that launched them on toward success. Get ready for the Playmakers Talk Show. Our host is Steve Klein, a renowned business author, keynote speaker, and master at helping clients reach peak performance through success skills, leadership, sales, time management, customer service, communication skills, and behavior change. He's helped generate quantum leaps for hundreds of companies. Now it's time to meet this week's Playmakers. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I am Steve Klein, and as we say all the time, Playmakers Talk Show is all about CEOs, business owners, and executives who have found success within their business and with themselves. Now, today's show is no exception, but today's show is all about pizza and books. We have in the studio today Mike Best, COO of Boston's The Gourmet Pizza Restaurant and Sports Bar, and Millie Brown, CEO of Brown Books Publishing Group. So to begin, let's start with Millie. Millie's here in our studio. Millie is a natural-born trailblazer with an extensive high-level business background. She's an author and publisher and has made a name for herself as the entrepreneurial publisher for entrepreneurial authors. Say that three times fast. Brown Books Publishing Group was the first independent full-service book publisher in the country to give authors what is rightfully theirs, and that is full ownership and rights to their intellectual property. Considered heresy in the beginning and still a radical divergence from traditional royalty publishing paths today, Millie's successful business model of relationship publishing is a collaborative partnership between author and publisher from start to finish. So with all that, Millie, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
To begin all this, I need to ask you the most important question, because there were two words in there that most people really don't understand, and I didn't when I first met you, and that is relationship publishing. What is that?
Relationship publishing is something that was very rare to the publishing world when I came into it 20-plus years ago, and I sort of backdoored into publishing because I had never intended to be a publisher, and I have another company called Personal Profiles that I was doing family histories and very happy doing my family history books. And I started getting people referred to me who wanted a publishing experience. And of course, that isn't what I did, and that certainly isn't what I wanted to do all those years ago. So I started exploring what this thing called publishing was and how the business worked. And I was, to say I was blown away is putting it mildly, that publishing was not traditionally friendly to authors. As a matter of fact, it was sometimes it was adversarial, but certainly the publishers did not. The authors were not the VIPs in the equation. The publisher was, you were lucky if you could get an audience with a publisher. So I came to the business when I finally decided that I could help people publish a book. I realized that you know, my business model throughout the years has always been, I like working with people, and I love getting to know people and being involved in a project. And I think that, especially when it comes to books, you know, when an author writes something, that is their, that's their pride and joy. That's something that's very, very, very important to them. And to be able to have a publisher that sees the vision for it, that cares about them and cares about their success, is what has made me successful, because I decided that I was going to be a collaborative publisher, that I was going to work with my authors in a way that had never been done before, that the author gets a say-so in what the book cover looks like, the author gets a say-so as far as what the content, because after all, that is their content. When a book comes out, I have known many, many an author who has published with the traditional houses, and quite frankly, when they saw their book for the first time, they hated it, didn't like it, weren't happy with it. And I thought, that's never going to happen around here, because we want your feedback. Now, if you're going off on a track that is not in the best interest of your book, obviously we're going to pull you back. We're the experts. But relationship publishing is all about the relationship. And I don't know about you, but you know, I love to have a relationship with the people that I work with. And I don't care whether it's my doctor, my attorney, my accountant, accountant, or if it's the cleaners down the road, you know, when they know my name and we can chit chat a little bit when I drop off my clothes, those relationships are what make a business successful. So relationship publishing is who we are, what we are, and it's what has helped us survive and thrive during the economic downturn.
I know a lot of authors that have nightmares and horror stories about some of the publishing they've had with the title being changed, and they didn't have the control over that. Again, the book title or book cover they weren't happy with, and even some of the content. And what's interesting about your relationship publishing is you involve the author all the time, and they have a tremendous amount of control on the final product. And you have people you bring in to help them with that.
I have a staff of the most talented publishing professionals in Dallas, Texas, and I have to tell you, being a publisher in Dallas, Texas is no easy. It hasn't been easy to bring in a group of the publishing's finest, because if I was in New York, my business would be so much different.
That's the center of the publishing world.
New York is where all the editors and all the designers and everybody that publishing is in their blood, they go to New York. They migrate to New York because they want to be in publishing. So Dallas, Texas, I have amassed over the last 20-some years, I have just the finest group of people. Once I get a fabulous person, they're mine forever. They're with me forever. And I have the most talented publishing professionals, from my managing editor to my PR director, my marketing director. These are people that have been with me a total of 30 plus years. They know the business, and as we previously mentioned, they get to know the authors, and they get to work with the authors intimately. So from editing the book and making the material be the best it can be, to going and promoting the book. I mean, you know, you can have the best book in the whole wide world, but if nobody knows about it, what good is it going to do you? So you have to have the marketing, you have to have the public relations, and obviously the distribution channels. So we actually have a, I'll brag a little bit, we have a sell-through rate of 86%, which is better than the big houses. That means that out of every 100 books that we publish, 86% of them get on the shelves in the bookstores. And that's huge. But again, it's because we have a relationship with the buyers. We have relationships with everybody.
And you have a relationship with all the different people you work with, and they're all experts at what they do, and you bring the right people in at the right time for the right author.
Every project is uniquely different, and that's what motivates me. If I was only doing cookbooks, I think my eyes would probably glaze over after the 100th cookbook. But I never know who's going to come through the doors next with what kind of a project. I will tell you, too, that I have coming out. I'd like to hear them. Yes, okay. I have two JFK books because, obviously, you know, we're a Dallas publisher. This is going to be the 50th anniversary of the assassination, and I have Hugh Ainsworth, who is just a world-renowned author, and he actually was on the scene in three different locations when he was a reporter when the assassination occurred. And we've got his nonfiction book, and then Brian Woolley, who was he's a renowned reporter here in the he has been all over the country, but he's a writer. He was with the Dallas Times Herald, the Dallas Morning News, and he wrote a book of fiction about the JFK assassination. So I've got those two coming out. And then I've got a book called The Reluctant First Lady. It's a book of fiction. I don't do a lot of fiction, but if it's really, really, really good, you can talk me into it. And The Reluctant First Lady is about a woman who really, her husband is elected president, and she doesn't want to be the first lady.
Sounds interesting.
It's really something that I wish we could have had out during the last presidential election, you know, but you know,
timing is everything.
Yeah, timing is everything. But it'll be out in February, I think. We're going to be launching that. No. I'll have to go back and look at the pub date on
but
that.
It's
in the works. Up. Yeah, it's hopefully soon.
Can people find this information out on your website?
Yes, brownbooks.com. And we publish all kinds of books. So I'm not looking for anything specific, but I'm looking for good books. We have a children's division. We have a Christian division. We are going to be – we've been publishing books in Spanish for quite some time now, but I'm launching a Hispanic division. We have a division even for CEOs. Actually, I have a lot of. I've published a lot of books for CEOs, and I firmly believe that everybody has a book in them. If you're a CEO, if you started a business, especially if you've survived the last 4 years, you have something to say. If you're an entrepreneur, somebody who has wisdom that can help other people, and I do lots and lots of books for CEOs. Most of them need ghostwriters though, because they don't either have the time or they don't have the inclination. And sometimes they'll admit, you know, writing is difficult and they don't have the talent. We bring in the professionals. I utilize a lot of ghostwriters for our projects. So I'm always looking for somebody who has either a great idea or a great manuscript that's already written. I apologize in advance. We can't accept everyone, but we're looking for a good book. If we feel that it can be marketed, I'm interested. Call me.
Well, we're going to talk more about what Millie Brown does at Brown Books. Again, it's brownbooks.com. Specifically, how you go about getting a book published, what it takes, and some more about some of those genres. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Playmakers Talk Show.
KLIF News and Information in the Morning
with Dave Williams and Amy Jadra.
There's a new report showing that military veterans returning from war are still having trouble finding jobs in the civilian world.
Monday morning, we'll dig into that report and talk with an expert who should be able to help.
Mondays are always important for catching up on news you may have missed over the weekend.
And of course, we'll have your first of the week weather and traffic.
News and Information in the Morning, 6 till 9.
News and Information, 570 AM, 96.3 FM, HD2.
KLIF.
Are you a CEO, business owner, or entrepreneur who's achieved outstanding success, or do you know someone who has? Hi, I'm Steve Klein, host of the Playmakers Talk Show here on 570 KLIF. The Playmakers Talk Show is all about leaders who have made it happen in their field or business. We're looking for these high-achieving playmakers as guests on our Playmakers Talk Show. Who are the high-achieving playmakers that you'd like to nominate? Right now, go to PlaymakersTalkShow.com. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and tell us who's the most outstanding playmaker you know.
I'm Corey Mencken with the ASPCA, asking you to join our No Pet Store Puppies campaign and take our pledge not to buy anything at pet stores or on websites that sell puppies. Chances are that the cute puppy in the window or on the internet came from a puppy mill, a large-scale commercial breeding operation where dogs are housed in overcrowded, unsanitary conditions without adequate veterinary care, food, water, or socialization. Help the ASPCA end puppy mill cruelty by taking our pledge at nopetstorepuppies.com.
You may have noticed doctors and nurses using the Exergen temporal scanner thermometer in hospitals and clinics. That's because it gives a fast, accurate reading with just a gentle forehead scan, backed by more than 40 published medical studies. It's a huge time saver, which makes it a great money saver too. Now, what you may not have noticed is that doctors and nurses use the Exergen temporal scanner thermometer at home too, for all the same reasons. So why not get one for your home? Pick one up today at Babies R Us, Toys R Us, and other fine retailers.
Here's Johann von Best, Executive Director of the Southwest Age Intervention Institute.
Typically, as we become older, between 40 and 45 and 50, we will generally begin to experience, you know, changes associated with aging. My energy is less than, I don't think as clearly. My memory, my focus is not there. I don't sleep as well. In the bedroom, there are changes that I don't want to deal with. That's where we come in. So we focus on exercise, which is appropriate. We all know that. A proper nutritional approach. The nutritional supplements that are going to be there directly for each patient to return them to health. But then rebalancing their hormone levels to allow them to mimic where they were when they were in their late 20s and in their early 30s. Become that vibrant person that they used to be beforehand. For most of us, at the age of 30, that really was our best time.
Contact the Southwest Age Intervention Institute at 1-800-AGE-EXPERT or on the web at 800AGEExpert.com.
We're back with the Playmakers Talk Show for business owners and self-employed professionals. Once again, here's Steve Klein.
And welcome back. This is Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein, and we are having a conversation with Millie Brown. Millie is the CEO of Brown Books Publishing Group, brownbooks.com. And we're talking about what she is an expert at and what she promotes and has relationship publishing. To ask the follow-up question, Millie, there are other options in publishing. There's a number of ways an author can go, all the way from having the book printed on a copy machine, which is probably the low end, all the way up to a Doubleday or Random House in New York. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the different options that an author has available.
When I first started publishing, there were no options for authors. That was really, it's so interesting how the business, the industry has changed in the last 20 years. When I first started, and matter of fact, that's one of the reasons why I made the decision to go into publishing, because authors really didn't have an option. Basically, there were they had two choices. One was they had to sell the rights. And I'm a big believer in, you know, if you've got intellectual property that's valuable, you know, that's, I wouldn't give up my intellectual property. So they either sold the rights to a traditional publisher, or there were these companies in the Yellow Pages that had way back when that advertised that were called vanity publishers. And that was it. And so when
a vanity would be called today a self-publisher?
Vanity, there's all kinds, you'll hear all kinds of terms thrown around out there, and it depends on what writer's conference you go to, what they tell you. So I think a lot of people have defined, you know, the publishing world. So you will hardly, you probably aren't going to find two people to agree. But from what I look at is, first of all, you have the traditional publishers, which have been around forever and ever, and they buy the rights, and they give the author usually a percentage. Oftentimes, it's 10-12% of net on the book sale. So they get 90%. And then the author has to go out and sell the book. Obviously, they have to do the work to go out and sell it. Then, you know, I'm considered an independent publisher. I'm sort of in the middle. And then you have self-publishing. Self-publishing, I'm not a big fan of, and I will tell you why. You know, it's sort of like, I maybe to the financial world, it's like day trading. I guess maybe that would be a good example. It's people that figure, well, how hard can publishing do? How hard can it be? I can go out and I can find an editor, or I can find a printer. Of course, any printer is going to take your money and print whatever you give them. But the success of a book is really going to be determined by the depth of distribution that you have, the knowledge of what you can do with a book. And, you know, so many, I have a division called Extreme Publishing Makeovers. And that is a division that I welcome all people who have previously self-published, because they realized that they didn't know what they were doing and they needed a professional. I'm a huge believer in professional services, you know, especially if your book is important to you. Now, there, you know, I'll talk out of both sides of my mouth. I mean, if it's just a book of poems that you're going to give to mom for Mother's Day, go self-publish. I don't care. But if it's a book that really is going to represent you and your credibility, or it's something that's important to you and you want to be taken seriously by the consumer, you cannot self-publish. And there's a lot of these little, we call them author mills, that have sprung up over the last couple of years. And these are companies that do their, and the public does not know this, but they do their editing in the Philippines now. Wouldn't you really like to have your editor be in the Philippines? Now, why do they do that? Because they're cheap and they're looking for volume, and they're just cranking out thousands and thousands and thousands of books. Matter of fact, I think some of them, they're stupid enough to tell you when you go on their website how many thousands, hundreds of thousands of books they publish. If you slow that down for a half a second, you realize that that's not a good thing. You know.
Let's kind of continue that in a little different vein. One of the authors I know is Robert Kiyosaki, who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. He will start a workshop, and he'll hold his book up, and he's a best-selling author.
For sure.
And he'll say, what is this? And everybody in the audience says, well, it's a book. He says, no, it's a calling card. One of the things I like about being a published author, and thank you very much for publishing my book, is the fact that it gets me in the door. People know who I am. It's part of my brand. And that's what you're talking about, too. People have books sometimes with inside themselves, and they want to get those out. But it's a part of who they are, which is why you help them with that.
You know, for so many years, I have been just preaching the message. And as I said a little bit earlier, that I think CEOs, Ebbie Halliday, great example. We published Ebbie's book. She didn't want to publish a book. She said, oh, honey, everything that people need to know about me has already been written. And she didn't understand that, no, there's a newspaper article here, there's a magazine article there, but there's never been a collection of Ebbie to where you could, from beginning to end, you can get to know her and her story. And that's so important for her legacy. privacy, and it's so important for her company. And I think that, you know, when it comes to publishing a book, yes, I think, you know, it is a calling card, and it is something that can give an opportunity to people, to your maybe people that you want to do business with, to get to know you, to get to know. I published a financial book for a gentleman not too many years ago, and his feedback to me was, he said, you know, he said, people are reading my book and calling me up and wanting to give me their money and their portfolios. And he said he was just incredulous at the immediate effect that a good book had, because especially something financial, because you could sit down with someone, you can ask them a lot of questions, and you know. And he said, I might have gotten that business anyway, but with a book, they were able to read, they liked what they read, and they were calling up and wanting to do business with me immediately. So yes, it's a calling card. And one thing I have to tell you, I'm so excited about this. I have a calling card on steroids coming out in another month.
Oh, this should be interesting.
Yes. I have been doing books for all kinds of successful business people for many, many, many years, but I have never, ever done a box set before. And I have a box set on leadership. Now, I have to tell you, it was almost scary when the author walked into my office and he had a manuscript that was probably about 3 feet high. And it was 6 books, and we have an independent 7th book. And I'd already published 1 book for him. But think about it. If you're a CEO out there, or if you're someone maybe in a company where you bring in speakers, and someone sends you their box set on leadership, are you going to think this person is an expert or what? It's, now, of course, you have to read it.
It's telling you an awful lot about that person.
Oh, my goodness. That person, and each book is 200 pages. So see, these aren't little baby books. This is a 200-page book, each times 6, that this is the definitive expert. So I'm going to be pushing for box sets in the future.
Well, if nothing else, that makes a great gift or a great great present.
Absolutely.
And if nothing else, being a published author puts you on a platform that you can't get in a lot of other ways.
Oh, it's almost mandatory now. You know, my senior editor, Dr. Harris, worked many years ago for YPO, and she was in charge of selecting the speakers globally to come and be in front of these prestigious audiences. And she tells a story about how she was so surprised how so many people would send their little packets. They'd send their videos and their press kits and their books. And the first thing she would do is look at their book. And if it was not superbly packaged, if it wasn't well written, if the cover wasn't a good cover, their whole packet went in the trash. So, you know, talking about how something can be a calling card, it can also be the worst thing that ever happened to you if it's not done well. And that's why, another reason why I don't like self-publishing, because that book is going to live forever. I mean, it's not like somebody writing a newspaper story about you. That book will be always available. You know, if not on Amazon, it's going to be on eBay for the rest of your life.
And the person that makes that work correctly is Millie Brown. Millie Brown, again, is CEO of Brown Books Publishing Group. You can find out more about her at brownbooks.com, or they can call you at
972-381-0009. I'd love to hear from them.
972-381-0009. Millie, thank you very much for being a guest in our first segment.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Wonderful information again, brownbooks.com. This is Playmakers Talk Show. We'll be right back.
Here's Johann von Best, Executive Director of the Southwest Age Intervention Institute.
It's probably logical for most of us. By the time we reach 50 years old, our hormone levels are in decline. Women, as you know, around the age of 50, begin to enter menopause and therefore experience those changes too. So energy is an enormous part of this. We go home, it's 6 o'clock at night, we have dinner, we go and watch TV, and the next thing it is, it's 7:30, 8 o'clock, and we're fast asleep on the couch. Your wife says to you, darling, do you want to go out to a movie? And you go, oh, darling, I'm just too tired, I can't do that. When you were younger, you were so vibrant. You never thought twice about somebody saying to you, hey, do you want to go and see a movie? Yes, you're already out the door at that point. Isn't it wonderful to have energy back again? Isn't it wonderful to feel so much better? And I think that's where we come in and do such a marvelous job.
Contact the Southwest Age Intervention Institute at 1-800-AGE-EXPERT or on the web at 800AGEExpert.com. That's 800AGEExpert.com.
McGruff the Crime Dog here, inviting you to listen in on this example of exploitation of the elderly. See how quickly and easily this scammer defrauds his prey.
Hello?
Mrs. Swanson, you're home.
Who is this?
I'm Steve from your bank, and we've had a security breach.
Oh, my.
We're calling customers to make sure your account is safe.
Why, thank you.
If you'd kindly read your credit card number, expiration date, and security code, we can get started.
Oh, dear. I'll get my purse. Give me just a moment.
Smooth-talking right criminals, often able to convince elderly folks to discuss personal or banking information, something they should never do unless the senior initiates the call. The National Crime Prevention Council wants to educate seniors so these scams can be reported to local law enforcement agencies.
Financial fraud can include identity theft, fake check and wire transfer scams, investment and credit card fraud, and online charitable solicitations. Unfortunately, only 1 in 5 of these crimes are reported. To learn more, go to ncpc.org/seniors. That's ncpc.org/seniors. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
Are you a CEO, business owner, or entrepreneur who's achieved outstanding success, or do you know someone who has? Hi, I'm Steve Klein, host of the Playmakers Talk Show here on 570 KLIF. The Playmakers Talk Show is all about leaders who have made it happen in their field or business. We're looking for these high-achieving playmakers as guests on our Playmakers Talk Show. Who are the high-achieving playmakers that you'd like to nominate? Right now, go to PlaymakersTalkShow.com. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and tell us who's the most outstanding playmaker you know.
Corey Mencken with the ASPCA, asking you to join our No Pet Store Puppies campaign and take our pledge not to buy anything at pet stores or on websites that sell puppies. Chances are that the cute puppy in the window or on the internet came from a puppy mill, a large-scale commercial breeding operation where dogs are housed in overcrowded, unsanitary conditions without adequate veterinary care, food, water, or socialization. Help the ASPCA end puppy mill cruelty by taking our pledge at NoPetStorePuppies.com.
We're back with the Playmakers Talk Show for business owners and self-employed professionals. Once again, here's Steve Klein.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. We're going to go from publishing to pizzas. And in our studio for this segment is Mike Best. And Mike is a chief operating officer for Boston's The Gourmet Pizza Restaurant and Sports Bar. And he has managed Boston's and the day-to-day operations since 2003. Prior to his role with his current role with Boston's, Mike was the president of MJ Designs. And most of you are familiar with MJ Designs, a Dallas-based national arts and crafts retailer. And he joined them in 1997 after his role as a chief operating officer at JH Collectibles, a Milwaukee-based retailer of fine women's apparel. Mike, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Steve.
First question, and I'm sure a lot of people have questions about this too, is what is Boston's?
I get that a lot, and more often, do we have a store in Boston's? The answer is no, we do not. We do not have any in Massachusetts, in fact. But Boston's is what would be considered a casual plus or polished casual concept. We focus on pizza pasta, but we do have a full menu casual dining. We have 91 items on our menu. About 40 of them are pizza pasta. The rest are your typical burgers, sandwiches, salads, ribs, that type of stuff. And in addition, we have a full-service sports bar. The building is pretty much split square footage-wise, 70% dedicated to the restaurant, 30% to the sports bar. And they're, you know, quite frankly, the thing that we look at and that we like about our concept, because I think to be involved for a long period of time, you got to like what you're doing and believe your brand is better. We really have the two concepts under one roof. We could actually take the sports bar, remove it from the building, move it down the street, and have a successful venture. But by putting them together, we believe it's a competitive advantage against the numerous competitors we have, not only in the Dallas market, but around the U.S.
Something a little bit different. So obviously, it's your concept and your food, which helps you stand out. Matter of fact, I'm looking at their website right now, which is Boston's.com. I'm looking under menu, and it looks like you have specialty foods or different types of foods for different times of the year. Is that correct?
Yeah, we'll do on average about 4 promotions a year, mainly to get new trial in there, but ultimately to pick winners out of those promotions that will go on to our new menu. And we run a new menu every 18 months. So it's sort of a testing ground. And then, we do want something called the best of the best, revalidate them, and then ultimately they'll end up on our menu there. But it's to really give a bit of a spice during the year.
Well, if you do go to their homepage and take a look, there's across the top, there's flashing different types of items, so it makes you hungry just looking at it.
Yes.
The company is a little older than most people might know because it actually started in Canada. Is that correct?
That is correct. It started in British Columbia in a place called Penticton. It will be in 2014 celebrating 50 years in business. And we have a big franchisee convention in Hawaii next year to celebrate that. But started by a Greek immigrant, and currently in Canada, there's 360 restaurants, largest casual dining concept in Canada. And about 13 years ago, we came into the U.S.
So is the concept in Canada similar to U.S.? Does it have a sports bar and casual dining?
Yeah, very, very similar. I mean, the menu items are a little bit different. Taste profiles are different. As close to the U.S. as Canada is. I mean, you know, we had to tweak a few things when we came into the U.S. and even in the layout of our restaurants. But yes, you would recognize one in Canada for one in the U.S. or vice versa.
What is the relationship then? Are you a division of that company? Are you a separate company based in Dallas?
We are a separate company based in Dallas. The Canadian company actually went public about 11 years ago. Interesting manner in which they went public. It's called an income trust, so it's the best of both worlds, similar to a REIT in the U.S. The operating company is still owned by the founders, and the day-to-day is run. They have a fiduciary responsibility to the income trust, which has publicly traded shares. In the U.S., we're privately held. I report to two gentlemen who are the co-founders. They're 50-50 partners. They have been for 38 years, and it works like a charm.
Yeah. Well, you use something different, too. In addition to having the sports bar and the casual dining, you also have for availability delivery.
Yes, we delivery is a big component of what we do. On average, our restaurants between 10 and 12% delivery, and then a big push over the last number of years, particularly in the downturn of the economy, has really been catering and delivering in office or in hotels, that type of stuff. Now, we won't provide wait staff to serve the food, but we'll deliver it in chafing dishes and stuff, and that's actually helped keep our sales up there over the last 3+ years. So
I read something interesting in the article that was written about you in the Dallas Business Journal a few weeks back. So you have a community relations program.
Yes.
How is that working? What do you do with that?
We currently we have 44 stores in the U.S., so we're really the little brother of the Canadian company. But in about 35 of our restaurants, we have a CRC, Community Relation Coordinator. It's funded by money that is paid by our locations into their marketing fund. And this person's whole role in life, be it a he or a she, usually about 20 to 30 hours a week, and they're out promoting the brand in the community, be it at, Little League fields, soccer fields, going to office buildings, trying to get people in for happy hour events, or delivering into the offices for meetings that they will have, and whatever we can do, to promote our brand. We're an emerging brand. We'd be referred to as an emerging brand. We don't have the advertising dollars as some of our deep-pocketed competitors. So we've got to do a grassroots campaign and be in the community. And obviously, an important part of that is making the contact, but then delivering on what we promise. Good food, good service. And, to get that repeat business, because it's all about building the loyal customer. That's really what matters today.
I'm sure it takes the right person to be that CRC in one of your in your restaurants, but that sounds like it would be a fun job to have, doing nothing but talking Bostons and food all day.
Yes, I would think so. And specifically with that, we go after people who have had some type of a marketing background. We have a number of locations around the U.S. that are in college communities, a prime example, College Station. So we have had over the years marketing students that have, the 20 hours available to work, and it helps them along their career path. And it's, obviously people who go into a profession like that have that personality that you want. We always say, hire personalities, we can train the rest.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely agree with that. It's easier to train them in what you want them to know than develop that personality yourself.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about your growth. You're a little bit smaller than your Canadian sister, which is unusual. Usually companies in the United States are larger than their Canadian counterparts. What are your growth plans for the next few years?
Well, you know, the last, we were, you know, 05, 6, 7, 8, 9, we were growing double digits, which was nice. It was about 25% increase in growth a year. Then we rolled into 08, 09, and it slowed down dramatically. I will point out, we are predominantly a franchisor. In the 44 stores that I operate in the U.S. and Mexico, we own 4 of them. In Canada, of the 360, they only own 3 of them. So we live and die by the franchisee. You know, sort of good news from a franchisor standpoint, a restaurant opens, we start making money, and I have no debt. The bad news is that, you know, it's easy to tell my sales force, I want more restaurants in the DFW market. It's a whole other thing to get people willing to commit the type of money to do a ground-up construction. So, you know, we have 40 stores in the U.S. and 23 states. It's like a shotgun approach, but we go after good franchisees. We have a distribution network with Sysco that allows us to go almost anywhere. But one of our focuses over the last 2 years has really been backfilling. And, you know, we came out, the Dallas market, the Texas market in general was pretty strong over the last 3.5 years. I have 3 restaurants in Florida. They actually surprisingly came through very well. And then the mid-Atlantic states around Maryland and Virginia. So we're really kind of focused our efforts in backfilling in there to get a little bit more strength in numbers so I can have a bit of a voice in the media aspect. With 5 restaurants in the Metroplex, you know, I can do a radio flight for 2 or 3 weeks and then I'm silent for 49, and that really does not work very well. So we're looking hopefully 9 to 10 here in the next year, 2 years, and you know, it'll give me enough money to be able to mount a reasonable campaign in addition to our CRC initiatives.
Mike Best is the COO for Boston's, the gourmet pizza restaurant and sports bar. I want to talk more about franchising and locations you have in Dallas right after our break. Stay with us. This is Playmakers Talk Show.
News and information, KLIF.
News every morning and afternoon.
More news, more stories than KRLD. News updates at least 4 times an hour, every 15 minutes. Right now, traffic on the 5s. Every morning and afternoon, followed by weather. With the most trusted name in North Texas, WBAP meteorologist Brad Barton.
Business news updates at 20 and 50 minutes after the hour.
And sports from Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket.
Your commute is covered, coming and going.
News and information, 570 AM, 96.3 FM, HD2, KLIF.
CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business owners, if 2013 will be your breakout year, listen closely, because the tools necessary for this year's success are available right now. Hi, I'm Steve Klein, host of the Playmakers Talk Show here on 570 KLIF, author of Sell When You See the Whites of Their Eyes, and CEO of the Professional Development Center. Which of these keynote talks or workshops will move your people toward peak performance this year? How to Slay Your Dragons? Values-Driven Leadership? Coaching for Improved Performance? Sell When You See the Whites of Their Eyes? Management by Strengths? The Time of Your Life? Outrageous Customer Service? Communication Skills? Or Behavior Change? Quantum Leap Success is just around the corner. So, if people development is in your organizational plans to move to peak performance, go right now to pdcchange.com. That's pdcchange.com, and let us know when we can help move you toward your best year ever in 2013. Oh, and ask for our free report.
When you want to know what the best product is, you ask an expert. So if you want to know why the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer is the best for you and your family, just ask doctors and nurses why they use it at work and at home, and they'll tell you. The Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer gives a fast, accurate reading with just a gentle forehead scan and is backed by more than 40 published medical studies. Those all add up to peace of mind that your family is using the best and a great value for the money. Get yours today at Walgreens and other fine retailers.
Are you a CEO, business owner, or entrepreneur who's achieved outstanding success, or do you know someone who has? Hi, I'm Steve Klein, host of the Playmakers Talk Show here on 570 KLIF. The Playmakers Talk Show is all about leaders who have made it happen in their field or business. We're looking for these high-achieving playmakers as guests on our Playmakers Talk Show. Who are the high-achieving playmakers that you'd like to nominate? Right now, go to PlaymakersTalkShow.com. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and tell us who's the most outstanding playmaker you know.
Corey Mencken with the ASPCA, asking you to join our No Pet Store Puppies campaign and take our pledge not to buy anything at pet stores or on websites that sell puppies. Chances are that the cute puppy in the window or on the internet came from a puppy mill, a large-scale commercial breeding operation where dogs are housed in overcrowded, unsanitary conditions without adequate veterinary care, food, water, or socialization. Help the ASPCA end puppy mill cruelty by taking our pledge at nopetstorepuppies.com.
We're back with the Playmakers Talk Show for business owners and self-employed professionals. Once again, here's Steve Klein.
Welcome back. Again, I'm Steve Klein, and this is Playmakers Talk Show. Our guest this segment is Mike Best. Mike is the COO for Boston's Gourmet Pizza Restaurant and Sports Bar. If you have your computer nearby, you can follow with us at bostons.com. And prior to the break, Mike and I were talking about franchising and the number of franchises in the United States. The question I have for you is, how do you find a franchise? Franchisee.
It's sort of a bit of a math exercise. So, you know, you start out with lead generation, and honestly, for 100 leads, you probably end up with potentially two people who end up going to closing. So there's a lot of work being done on the internet, our salespeople at trade shows, call-ins, referrals. So we have to filter through an awful lot of people who are sort of kicking the tires out there. You know, our monetary investment is, you know, $1.5 million to $2 million. So it's not like you're going to be opening a Jiffy Lube. That's a lot less expensive. So we kind of target people in that area that we know will they'll be, and, you know, really focus on people who have other brands that are, you know, multi-unit operators that maybe can't grow in a territory that they'd like to. And, you know, with 40 units in the U.S., we obviously have a lot of territory that's available. So those are type of people we would go after. You know, one of the challenges that we've had over the last 3.5 years has been, you know, everybody just nervous about what's going to happen next, particularly the baby boomers, who are kind of the people you're really looking for that have the money. You know, they're concerned right now about retirement and holding back a little bit. And then the people that we are able to find, like the mom and pops, because we still will do mom and pops. It ultimately comes down to the operator, who's going to be minding the restaurant. And that's really what we focus on. So, you know, real estate, and they talk about, you know, being the primary criteria. Real estate's important, but I always argue and tell people, we can find you an A-plus site, you put a mediocre operator in, I have a B store. Conversely, I can find you a B site, a good operator. It may not be A-plus, but it's going to be A-minus. So it's who's minding the store. But with people in that sort of caliber, the mom and pops, and I don't, you know, it's people who have been general managers, they aspire to be something else, the financing is extremely difficult for them. Right now, outside of, I think, hotels, the restaurant industry is probably right behind them in reluctancy from lending institutions to give money, because there were a significant amount of closures and empty real estate and quite a bit of write-offs on banks' balance sheets. So one of the things that we are in the process of doing, and we're pretty close, is putting a financing package together. We're talking to a number of national lenders, and ultimately, as the franchisor, we're going to guarantee a piece of the debt to be able to stimulate this growth for us, because as a franchisor, we live and die by our franchisees. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, can they afford to do it, and are they the type of person that we believe is going to operate the business the way we want? We're privately held. We're not publicly traded. I don't have pressure to. I've got to meet numbers for Wall Street, and, you know, so the stock price goes up. It's, you know, to do the right things. Yes, we want to add units, but we want to add successful units and have these people who come in be additive to our brand.
Well, being small, it's more exclusive for someone to open their store too. But the question I have is, you have 44 stores, 40 of which are franchisee-owned stores, and you have 4 that you own yourself.
Correct.
How do you make a determination of whether you'd like to have a franchisee or your company owning the store?
Well, if I were king, because I, you know, I do run the day to day, but I don't control the money. The owners do. We follow a lot of how the model was built in Canada. And obviously with 360 and only 3 owned up there, clearly it's franchising. The U.S. is a little bit different. I mean, you know, it's like a big rock, and I've been chipping at that big rock for almost 10 years now to be able to add some more corporate stores in a location and then ultimately operate them successfully, but be willing to sell them to a franchisee group with some other territory. I'm not there yet, but I'm getting closer. So I hope my boss is listening to this, and we'll take the hint there. But really, we go out looking for franchisees.
Well, let's talk about the stores you have in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, since we have primarily a DFW audience. And I'm looking at the website right now, again, bostons.com. If you go to locations and click on Texas, you will see seven of them, of which five of them are in the Metroplex.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Yep. You were talking also about the fact that you want to expand here.
Yes.
How many more would you like to have in the Metroplex?
Obviously, they're, you know, based upon some of our national competitors, you can have upward to 20. I mean, we really would like to have, you know, low single digits, call it, you know, 10 to 12 would be great, because it would allow me the ability to, you know, spread our name and promote the brand a little bit better. You know, I still have a lot of, we have a restaurant in Grapevine. I live in Southlake. I still have neighbors after 10 years saying, now, where's your restaurant again? It's just, you know, they don't really, you see it, but you don't see it here. You know, it's interesting in that I've got four restaurants under construction, none of which are in Texas right now, but Fenton, Michigan, which is north of Detroit, about an hour and a half. The store's under construction. It's a city of about 55,000 people, and it's a feeder town, so roughly about 80,000 in total. We've been in the news three times about the construction. All right, so it's a big event. Everybody knows it. You know, when it opens, everybody's going to be excited. We'll just have to execute when they get there. In Dallas, you open up another restaurant, it's sort of ho-hum, right? You have a lot of them out there, but doesn't mean we don't try. I mean, we do want that critical mass to be able to get out and give us the exposure from a brand standpoint that we like. And, you know, I think we're getting close.
I was told years ago that Dallas is one of the number one cities in the United States for number of restaurants per capita. Is that still correct?
That is still correct. I mean, at this point, Florida is giving it a good run for its money. You know, Florida has probably equal at this point restaurants. But as far as, you know, brands and national brands, headquartered, Dallas is still the number one. I mean, it really is the restaurant capital of the world, led by really Brinker, the number one with Chili's, and then Carlson with Fridays here. So a lot of restaurant talent, which from our standpoint is great from a recruiting perspective.
So the fact that you are successful in the Dallas-Fort Worth area says a lot about your franchise operation.
Yes, it does. I mean, I'll give you a prime example. It's one, we have a discovery day, which is a day when people are interested. They come in, they learn about us, we learn about them. But we have our corporate store, our training facility also at 635 and MacArthur in Irving. And that restaurant's been there about 12 years. When it opened, it did about $2.5 million. And today it'll do about 2.8. So obviously it's gone up, and, you know, that's nice. But you look at it and say, well, inflation will get me there plus over that period of time. But in a 10-year period, that whole trade area in about a 4 or 5 mile radius is about 32 national competitors who have moved in. So we feel pretty good about, you know, not having a voice, not being on the radio, just really doing the things we need to do day in, day out. Good service, good facilities, and good food, and we can compete.
Again, I'm looking at the website. The two outside of Dallas-Fort Worth are in Killeen.
Correct.
So you're not too far outside of Austin. And you also have one in College Station.
Yes.
The other five are Irving. Is that the store you were talking about?
That's the Corporate Training Center, yes.
Grapevine, you mentioned. There's also a restaurant in McKinney,
yes.
Fort Worth, and Arlington.
Correct, yep.
And so if anybody would like to check those out, again, bostons.com locations, you can find out where those are. So your plans are to expand, but you also have some philanthropic efforts too going on. Is that correct?
Yeah, we believe in giving back to the community, and that's really sort of been in the DNA of the brand. It started in Canada. The Canadian company is one of the largest. We have a foundation in Canada and one in the U.S. The one in Canada is probably one of the largest foundations from a retail restaurant perspective up there. And that same thought process has come in here in the U.S. And for the last – I've been here now 10 years, and for the last 9 years we've done – at Valentine's Day, we do an event, a heart-shaped pizza. And we donate $1 of every pizza to this past year. It's been St. Jude's Children's Hospital. They've been our partner for about 3 years in that venture. And all the stores around the country remit the money to us, and we in turn send it off to them. But also in the Dallas market, every September, we have a golf tournament. Vendors, suppliers, and people come in. We have it at Las Colinas Country Club. And, you know, we've raised, last year was our best yet. We raised $80,000, and we donated that to a local charity called Kid Matter International, which is an interesting organization, and I don't mean to disparage any of the big national charities, but up until about 3 years ago, it would be, you know, we'd raise the money, we'd have the check signing or the check presentation, and everybody would go their separate way, and you would, you know, expect the money to go where it was said to be going. With Kids Matter, we donate the money, and for the last 3 years at Kohl's and Southlake, we've partnered with Kohl's and a charity called Bruckner that provides shoes for these kids. But this past year, we clothed 1,029 kids. So they go through the Kohl's store. Kohl's discounts product significantly for them. They get a $125 gift card, and they shop. And we have volunteers that walk them through the store. Santa comes on the big fire truck. But the just the feeling you get when you're in that store walking around seeing these children, because, you know, in a lot of cases, these kids, this is all they're going to get. I mean, this is Christmas for them, and they can only buy clothes. And we also have a partner, Ryan Palmer, a golfer. Ryan's foundation gives backpacks with books in it to the children when they leave, and it's just a very, very special event. And, you know, we'll continue to do that. It's interesting because we've asked for volunteers from our staff, and we have about 600, not on my staff, but in total. And the first year, we got a few of the employees that came out. The second year was the employees, spouses, kids. Third year, employees, spouses, kids. Kids, cousins, church groups, and it's just, you know, you get a chill up your spine, or at least I do every time I, you know, witness this thing. And, you know, something we're going to continue to do again this year.
If you do frequent Boston's, you know that part of those proceeds are going to help the kids, too. Obviously, your restaurant's for kids to a large degree, and you're helping the kids along the way.
That's correct.
Final comments. We just have another few minutes. Any specific things that have caused Boston's to be really successful?
You know, I think we touched a little bit earlier, Steve, that, you know, two concepts under one roof. I mean, when the, you know, the brand developed in Canada, it did not want to be a me too. So the bar was not just a waiting room for the dining room. It was a separate business, so to speak. So we've been able to capitalize on that. And then I think really, you know, food for me. We have a full-time chef. The food is not an afterthought. You know, one of the, you know, connotations in the U.S. sports bar, bad food. You know, we live with that. But, you know, I believe once we get somebody in our doors, well, they'll be our customer, because the food is important. We're continuing tweaking it, improving it, making it better. And, you know, I think that's how we've been successful to this point.
So please check out Boston's. And again, Boston's.com to find out about that. Boston's, the gourmet pizza restaurant and sports bar, changing people's attitudes about sports bars and food, and they're both good. Yes. Mike Best has been our guest, Chief Operating Officer for Boston's Gourmet Pizza Restaurant, and thank you very much for being here, Mike.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
Again, Boston's.com, and you can get all the information there. My name is Steve Klein. This is Playmakers Talk Show, and you can always check out our website, which is PlaymakersTalkShow.com. You can also get check the archives for shows that we've had before and in the future. Again, I'm Steve Klein, Playmakers Talk Show. Please join us again next week.
Here's Johann von Best, Executive Director of the Southwest Age Intervention Institute.
Typically, as we become older, between 40 and 45 and 50, we will generally begin to experience, you know, changes associated with aging. My energy is less than, I don't think as clearly, my memory, my focus is not there, I don't sleep as well. In the bedroom, there are changes that I don't want to deal with. That's where we come in. So we focus on exercise, which is appropriate, we all know that, a proper nutritional approach, the nutritional supplements that are going to be there directly for each patient to return them to health, but then rebalancing their hormone levels to allow them to mimic where they were when they were in their late 20s and in their early 30s. Become that vibrant person that they used to be beforehand. For most of us, at the age of 30, that really was our best time.
Contact the Southwest Age Intervention Institute at 1-800-AGE-EXPERT or on the web at 800AGEExpert.com.
News and information, 570 AM, 96.3 FM, HD2, KLIF.
CEOs, entrepreneurs, and business owners, if 2013 will be your breakout year, listen closely, because the tools necessary for this year's success are available right now. Hi, I'm Steve Klein, host of the Playmakers Talk Show here on 570 KLIF, author of Sell When You See the Whites of Their Eyes, and CEO of the Professional Development Center. Which of these keynote talks or workshops will move your people toward peak performance this year? How to Slay Your Dragons? Values-driven leadership? Coaching for improved performance? Sell when you see the whites of their eyes? management by strengths, the time of your life, outrageous customer service, communication skills, or behavior change. Quantum Leap success is just around the corner. So, if people development is in your organizational plans to move to peak performance, go right now to pdcchange.com. That's pdcchange.com, and let us know when we can help move you toward your best year ever in 2013. Oh, and ask for our free report.
News and information at 570 AM.
96.3 FM HD2. KLIF Dallas. KSCS FM HD2 Fort Worth. KLIF.com.
A Cumulus station.